My name is Annette Hines, and I am the founder of Special Needs Law Group and Special Needs Family Services, also known as Special Needs Companies. I'm so excited to be here today. There is so much to talk about in the world of transition, whether you are a young person transitioning into an adult role, whether you are someone who is a disabled adult now transitioning your caregivers and your circle of support, whether you're a family member with concerns and wanting to put a good plan in place. We're going to talk about all of that. So this presentation is going to be high level, the beginning of a discussion about what a transition plan looks like, who needs one, what should be in it, and what can we do next. We're going to leave you with some action steps, and we're going to hopefully inspire you to have that deeper and detailed discussion with your team. Okay, so we are talking about getting on the right path for transition planning or transitioning your disabled person. And we did talk a little bit about what that might mean, but we're going to go into a little bit more detail now. So, does this sound like you? Are you somebody who is disabled, confused about the services and supports that are available to you, not sure how to put all of those things together? No one place to go to ask questions. Are you overwhelmed by your new role as a caregiver, navigating these complicated systems and supports? Maybe you're stepping in for a sibling or a cousin. We have so many people that we help who are in that position. Maybe you're a professional who's not sure where to turn because you want some clear guidance for your clients who are either emerging adults with disabilities or someone who has been an adult and struggling or going through life with their disability. Maybe you're a parent who's burdened. I know that was me. And trying to navigate these complex systems again during your child's transition years, we call that maybe, 15 to 25. It's a very dense time period with a lot going on. So, if that sounds like you, it was definitely me. I found that when my children were young, especially my Elizabeth, who was born profoundly disabled, tons of healthcare issues, there wasn't one place to go. There was a ton of places. She had multiple diagnoses. So you could go to the Muscular Dystrophy Association for this. You could go to Children's Hospital social workers for that. You could talk to your nursing agency for something else. You could talk to your school for another thing. There wasn't a way to put it all together. And I was on this path of losing my mind, frankly. So I have this sign above me here that says, create the things you wish existed. This is my motto that I live by. When my daughter Elizabeth was born, an advocate was born right along with her. So exciting. No, it was terrifying, actually, but it gave me what I needed to create something special for all of us in the disability community. So who is this presentation for? A disabled youth preparing for his or her adult life, parents who are in the middle of planning and advocating for their child's adult life, again, trying to figure out what doors to go through. Who may be that next generation of caregivers, advocates, and supporters? We call that our circle of care. You're going to hear that term a lot today. Perhaps disabled individuals who are self-advocates, making sure that they're putting a plan in place for themselves, and also professionals and allies in our disability community. So what's the old way that we used to do this? I alluded to this a little bit. I talked about, you got to go in this door. You got to go in that door. You got to ask this question to this person about MassHealth or Medicaid. You have to ask this person about Social Security. You have to ask this person about school supports, and on and on and on. So we would rely on the school system many times and our state agencies for advice and referrals. They'd be our go-to and they'd be our only go-to. And whatever they said, we just kind of took it as gospel. I don't know about you, but the endless phone calls, one agency after the next, I remember when I was trying to find out how I could get supports to build a ramp on my house so that my daughter could get in and out without me having to carry her and the wheelchair up and down, up and down, up and down the steps. I had a split level. So it was a ways up to get to that first level. Oh my gosh. I called so many places trying to figure out. And then I got some information about this little grant and somebody else, you know, told me about a loan program. And another place I went to said, here's how you get help with your town about your building codes. And it was so much, so much. The project was very overwhelming. Maybe you're like me also. I attended every free presentation out there, you know, whether it was on an individual topic, whether it was, you know, about guardianship or ABLE accounts or Social Security, or whether it was more general like this, whether it was a support group or whether it was, you know, a big conference. I went to it all. And I also volunteered for absolutely everything so that I could find out what was going on and, you know, try to be in the know. I spent many of the early years of my kids' childhood being terrified that I didn't know something that I needed to know and feeling completely unprepared and inadequate to deal with all of this. By the time my Elizabeth got to be 17, she was very, very sick. We were doing hospice for her, but I was exhausted. So had we gone through these transition years with her, as I did with my younger daughter, Caroline, I didn't have anything left to give and to put it all together. I needed a breath of fresh air. So I also picked up brochures at all of those conferences and offices that I visited. And I read books and pamphlets and blog posts. And it was amazing how many times something would be contradictory to something else that I was reading. And some of the stuff I was reading was a little too happy for me. Maybe you enjoy that, but me, I wanted real talk. So now we want you to do things differently. And I want to inspire you to do things differently. And more than that, I want to help you to do things differently. I want you to get all the information you need in one place. I want you to be able to write down a plan with action steps. I have never met a checklist I have not loved. I want you to be able to gather a team to support you during the transition process. You're going to call this your circle of care. This is the group of supporters that you're going to be able to count on. And those people are going to change over time. So you need a process where you can keep up with that flexible planning that you need. And I want you to move from this fractured approach that we have now to a true person-centered plan. Because so many times we are planning about the person and not with the person. Okay. So why do we as parents and caregivers and people in our disability community persist in the old way? Maybe you think that there's no time to do this in a more comprehensive way, and just the thought of trying something new exhausts you. And remember, I told you, by the time my kids were in their teenage years, I was exhausted. I didn't have anything left to give. Maybe other people in the disability community have given you the impression that this should be easy because it was easy for them. I can't tell you how many times I have heard from some poor family member that so-and-so neighbor or so-and-so, you know, in this conference or in this presentation told them that, you know, here's the three easy steps that you need. It's not easy. And if you think it should be easy because somebody told you, oh, I just walked right in and got my guardianship papers, you know, that just makes you feel inadequate. That makes you feel shameful about the fact that you're struggling. Don't live in that shame and don't live in that place. We all struggle through this. This is not easy stuff, okay? The last thing, and oh, I feel so strongly about this. There's so much contradictory information and so much misinformation out there. If I had a nickel for every time somebody came into my office or met with me by Zoom or whatever and gave me some tidbit of information that they were absolutely convinced was right, And it wasn't, whether it was about Social Security or about the guardianship process or about Medicaid, a special needs trust, you know, that's a really big one. I hear every week still after decades of doing this work, well, special needs trust can't pay for this. You know, there is no such thing as a trust can't pay for this. It's all about what should a trust pay for. But that's, you know, where people just get on the wrong path because they're not getting the right information and they don't know who to trust. They don't know where to turn. You hear things from different people who are in, you know, positions of authority, and you feel like, well, they should know what they're talking about. I should be able to trust that person that I call at the Medicaid agency, should be able to trust the information I'm getting from my Social Security office. It's terrible that we have to take everything with a grain of salt and really put our own information package together and our own plan. Ultimately, there is this combination of ever-changing rules and resources are constantly moving around on us. There's that exhaustion that sets in by this time in a disabled person's life, and it creates a perfect storm to block your access to this complete person-centered life plan that I'm talking to you about. But I want you to get excited because I think we can do this. We can do it together. So I want you to just imagine for a minute, because envisioning where you want to go is so important. I do an end of year, beginning of year episode with just me, where I talk about goal setting. This is not New Year's resolutions. This is setting goals. And you need to be able to have that vision. What does it look like if I were to be successful at this planning process? So I want you to think about, what if you were finally feeling empowered and knowledgeable as that advocate for your person? What if also you understood finally how to navigate these complex systems and get through this transition phase? Or maybe what if you were confident about your new role as a caregiver or a supporter in navigating these agencies and systems and supports that are out there? And even had a system for organizing your resources, all your questions and your action steps, so that you can accomplish those goals that you're setting for yourself and your person. And also, what if you felt validated, put aside that shame, and feel comforted and confident knowing that you have the guidance that you need to be able to get through this and get to the other side? If you who have not met me, I'm the mother of two daughters. My daughter Elizabeth passed away from mitochondrial disease when she was 17. That was almost 9 years ago. I still live with the grief every day. I talk about how it's really odd and strange, but I carry joy and sorrow in my heart every day, and they can coexist. You do not need to put your sorrow aside and your grief aside in order to experience joy. That was a life-changing philosophy for me. So know that you can live in this world of craziness and be sad and angry and also feel joyful and powerful and connected. All of those things can exist at once. It's very freeing. So I don't like to tell you how many years of experience I have because it makes me feel a little old, but I have a ton of experience as a parent, an advocate, an attorney. I'm an author. I wrote a book about my experiences with Elizabeth, and I have a podcast. I have been on a mission to bring information and support to our disability community in a comprehensive way, not send people to, oh, here's this resource if you have muscular dystrophy. Here's this resource if you have autism. You want to go here if you're an adult, here if you're a parent, here if you're a family member. This is where you go for financial advice. This is where you go for legal advice. I really wanted to bring together all of these pieces. It's been a mission of mine. Again, it all stems from not having the information I needed when my kids were growing up. So what is transition? It's really this question that's nagging at you, whether it's about you or about your person. How am I going to be okay? How is my person going to be okay? Where will I live? Who will advocate for me and with me and support me? Will my kid have friends? Do you know how many times I've heard that? Oh my gosh. Will they have community? Will I, as a disabled person, have community? Will I be able to work? Where will I work? What will that look like? What decisions will I be able to make for myself? And what will I need help with and support with? What financial support is needed? Where will that come from? And so many more questions. But this is what transition planning means, answering all of these questions. First, you have to identify the questions, right? This is key.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Have you been searching for a law firm that understands the unique challenges of your family? We can help. My name is Annette Hines, and I'm a mom and an attorney. And I'm also an advocate. And I started Special Needs Law Group because when my family was young, I struggled to find all the services and support that my family needed. We can help here at Special Needs Law Group with special needs trusts, guardianships, and maybe you aren't even sure what you need yet, and we can help with that too. Book a free call today. You can either use our link in the show notes, or you can go to www.specialneeds-law.com. See you soon. Okay. So let's talk about that transition plan and what is it all about? What does it hold in its grasp? You know, it's this shift from entitlements as a child, as a disabled child, to eligibility, but maybe not funded as an adult. That's one piece of it. Also, what does it mean to be that key advocate for yourself or your person? It's a change in roles from parent or family member to supporter. Taking off that parent hat, that family member hat, is so difficult. I know I struggle with that all the time with my younger daughter. And you really need to get into the groove with, I'm a supporter. You know, you're still a parent, but you're not acting as a parent anymore. It's a very different hat to wear. Identifying the goals for your person, yourself, your family, and then talking about what a person-centered plan really is. This is going to be key, and it's where you start. Okay, what does person-centered planning mean? So I always start with voice and choice. So voice and choice is something that I coined a few years ago and started giving keynotes on. It's all about making sure that the disabled person's voice is heard and that it is at the center of the entire planning process. Also, that choices are honored. So making sure that voices are heard and choices are honored is really where we want to go. That's the start. You have that down, you're already well on your way to a fantastic plan. You want to always be looking at, what are the least intrusive means to support this person? Or what are the least intrusive means used to support me? Who is my circle? What are my team members going to be like? This is going to be different for every person out there. The people that I needed to support Elizabeth were not going to be the same types of supporters that an adult with autism might need, or somebody with a limb difference, or a person with an intellectual disability, somebody with mental illness or mental health challenges. Very different circle of support, and identifying those people and bringing them into your plan will be key. Remember, we talked a little bit a few minutes ago about the fact that we need flexibility in the plan because we grow, we age, We change. You know, we're not stagnant people. Our plan is going to be flexible and change as well as the people that are going to support that plan. So don't think that you're going to be a one and done. The key here is to really learn how to implement that planning process and how to keep implementing and changing that plan as you go forward in life. What about evaluations and assessments? I get this question all the time. Is this key to a person-centered plan? Well, the answer is no, you absolutely do not have to have evaluations and assessments. If you do choose to use them, and there are formal and informal evaluations and assessments, they are clinical in nature and other, not clinical in nature, make sure that you give them their due weight, meaning don't give them so much weight. They can be super helpful, and we are often recommending that people do use some forms of evaluations and assessments, particularly during these, you know, difficult transitions. But make sure that they're only one piece of the puzzle, just like you don't want to rely on somebody's diagnosis as the be-all and end-all for how to plan for them. You really want to make sure that your evaluations and assessments are appropriate, that they are individualized, that they are answering the questions that you're asking, that they are actually making recommendations. A lot of times you'll get an assessment and it just gives you a bunch of data points, but it doesn't actually make a recommendation for going forward. You want those recommendations. And remember that if you've met one person with an intellectual disability, you've met one person with an intellectual disability or autism and so on. Every person is unique and needs a different plan. So what is included in the transition planning process? I always talk about this as a three-legged stool. If you only have two of these legs, the stool falls over. You can't sit on it and you cannot use it as your base. You can't depend on it. It's not sturdy. So you need to look at these three pieces and put them together. And then you have a whole plan. You have to look at public benefits, which are an enormous subject matter in and of itself. And we don't have enough time today to go into every individual type of public benefit and what all the eligibility rules are for all of them. But you are looking at how do I access these public benefits? And if I'm denied, what advocacy do I need to use to be able to get eligibility? What kind of financial benefits are out there? For example, Social Security. That's just the tip of the iceberg, though. What about healthcare benefits? You have to be looking at Medicaid and Medicare in your state, as well as private insurance, and how all of these pieces fit together. What is covered and what is not covered? And do I have to pay or not pay for these public insurance programs? What about housing? Oh my gosh. Where do I live? Who pays for it? Where do people with disabilities live in your community? What kind of supports am I going to need in my own home? That is key. And there are so many other questions as well, including state agency supports. Like in Massachusetts here, we have the Department of Mental Health, the Department of Developmental Services, the Commission for the Blind, the Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing, and the Mass Rehab Commission, and so on and so on. Knowing where those state agencies fit in is also part of public benefits. The number one most valuable and most expensive for many people public benefit that they will receive is their special education, the special education services. It is a key component, and you want to make sure that you are maximizing what you get through that entitlement program, because under IDEA, if you are found to need a service or support, regardless of cost, it must be provided to you by your school district. The second leg of the stool is how we support legal decision making. And there are so many options now. Back in the day, it was always, oh, you just went right to court, you went right to guardianship. In some states, it's called conservatorship. Most states call it guardianship. And you are basically terminating somebody's legal rights and their right to self-determination and independence. So guardianships have evolved over time. And since 2011, we have been implementing all around the country something called WINGS. And so you want to make sure that you're in touch with your guardianship reform initiatives in your state, because it is incredible that the combination of supporters and advocates and stakeholders that have come together to support revolution when it comes to guardianship and legal decision-making and supports. So now we're really moving towards supported decision-making agreements, which really are just putting on paper the natural supports that we've always had in place. People naturally choose their supporters and what they want to discuss with their supporters. For example, a supported decision-making agreement is just an agreement that the individual with a disability will enter into with a group of their chosen supporters, and they get to choose what they would like support with. What kind of decisions do I need support around? Those supporters are not decision makers. It's just like any other conversation you would have with somebody who supports you in your life. You know, I am of a certain age and I still ask my mom for her advice. She's a natural support for me. However, I do not always take that advice when it's given. That is the same thing that we have in supported decision-making agreements. Your person may decide that they want you as a supporter for relationship advice. They'll listen, but they do not need to follow the advice that you're giving them. This is called the dignity of risk. We want the people in our community with disabilities to have the same rights to make mistakes as people without disabilities in our community. It's very important that we again remember voice and choice. Choices must be honored, must, not should be, must be honored. And voices must be heard. So remember that your person or you, if you're the person with a disability, are at the center of this planning team. Okay. And it's your goals that we must be listening to. We then can use legal documents as a step forward or a step up. They can be used in combination with a supported decision-making agreement. There's no reason they cannot. These are somewhat state-specific, but have some overarching themes. A power of attorney can be for financial matters or healthcare matters, and you can have both. You want to take a look at your healthcare contracts, you know, however you're entering into them, whether it's called a healthcare proxy or a power of attorney for healthcare decision-making. And you want to look at both the ability to share information and have conversations, as well as the ability to support decision-making. And again, that's going to be a little different from state to state. And then finally, if we can't avoid a guardianship or a conservatorship, then we will know that in the planning process as we're looking at this from a person-centered perspective. And then we can go to court and seek only the authority and the limited authority that we need to accomplish our support goals. We do not go for the whole banana. You only go for the authority that you need. And that is going to vary depending on your person's ability and the complexity of their life. Lastly, that last leg of the stool, so important. Protect the plan you've put in place. And that means using estate planning, whether it's special needs trusts, ABLE accounts, having a rep payee in place for Social Security, having a decision maker or a supporter with mass health benefits, or well, that's in our state, Medicaid benefits in your state, and so on. There are a number of rules that can go into place in this special needs planning realm that will help protect the person-centered planning decisions that you've made, and the wonderful public benefits that you've been able to become eligible for. So exciting, but it is tough to work on all of these things. You do not have to do this all at once. This is a marathon, not a sprint. You're in this for the long haul. Remember that we many times will come to this point in our life and we're at a mode of, you know, we're exhausted or we're in crisis. So think about the person who is transitioning at age 18 to 22 into an adult life. Parents are tired by that time. They've been fighting the good fight for a long time. What if, you know, you're looking at some family crisis has happened and a sibling or another family member or close friend has stepped into support because the natural supports that were in place are not there anymore. A parent has gotten sick or died. Another family member that was acting as a supporter is not available anymore. So we're in crisis. We're tired. We're learning a new role. We're stressed out. These are not the best times to be tackling things, right? But this is where you need to dig deep. Take a deep breath and just get ready for what's coming next. You also need to be a great advocate throughout this process. And that means that I want you to know your opponent. What does that mean? Know the person that you're advocating against or with to get what you need. Make sure that you're an expert in your field. And that means being an expert in yourself or your person. Know everything there is to know about that communication device that you need or about your specific condition that you've been diagnosed with so that you can communicate that to others and, you know, speak with authority, but also educate as you go along. You want to be creative. It's so important. Do not be that person who comes to the table advocating, but asking somebody else to solve your problem. Have some ideas. They will love you if you come to the table with an idea that makes sense or that may be able to be implemented. And all you need to do is work out the details. Communicate effectively. My goodness, I could do a whole lecture on the bad ways that we communicate. And I was one of those parents. I had terrible nickname. I won't even tell you what it is, kind of like mother from hell, but it was worse. And in the early years, I was angry all the time. I yelled. I was bad to people. I didn't understand that their role was not there just to frustrate me. But the systems are broken and we all want to fix them. And that almost everybody who comes into this disability community as an ally or a supporter or a professional is there because they want to do good stuff for us. And I promise you that you can get there. But that effective communication means that you need to be clear and you need to be concise and quick with your statement, with what you need, with your data points. You want to take the emotion out of it if you can, unless you really think that emotion is going to be effective at that time. Sometimes it is, but mostly not. If you need help, practice with somebody. Write things down. I do all the time. I never do anything without practicing and having tons of notes. It makes me feel more confident, and it will make you feel more confident too. And when you are confident, you get stuff done. Lastly, please be prepared to compromise. Be prepared in your advocacy to lose some battles because you're not going to win them all. Be prepared to be upset, but do it behind the scenes. This is very frustrating, and this is our lives we're talking about here. But also be patient. Your timelines are your timelines. Not everybody is working on that same timeline. I occasionally have someone who will contact our practice. And if they don't get an answer in like 4 hours, they're so upset and frustrated. Everybody is overwhelmed and busy. The world that we live in now has changed so much. There's not enough of us doing this work. And so it can be very hard to meet everybody's needs that's there. Okay. This is the exciting part. Let's talk about what now? What happens next? What are your first steps that you can take? So first of all, please know there's so much to consider here. And I know that it is difficult to know right off the bat what the right choices are, what the right goals are to set for yourself, for your family. So while these are not easy decisions, they're also not stagnant in time, as we talked about. Things will change, so you need to be flexible. But I really want you to trust yourself, trust yourselves. You know what you need. Deep down, you'll find it. Work together, create a great team to guide you, and you're the head of that team. We call this our circle of care. Once you start with these beginning steps, you are on your way. So I've been on this mission to provide information and support. And the thing that I kept noticing was that most of the people who came into my office wanted to sit down with me and they wanted to download me. And many of them asked the same general questions over and over again. And I love this part of my practice. I love this consultation, this advocacy and support. But I started to think there's just got to be a better way to provide this to a larger group of people and give that same message, send you out as those confident army of advocates for the disability community. That's what I want, to create an army of people armed with information, knowledge, confidence, and the ability to go out there and get what we need. This army is going to change the world. It really is. So I created an online on-demand video course about transition planning, and it is comprehensive. It includes a course book, a workbook, 15 video modules, and bonus glossary, lots of handouts. And this downloadable workbook is going to be your guide. You're going to fill it out as you go along with your goals and your thoughts and your people that you want to bring together. And by the time you're done with this transition planning masterclass, you are going to have the beginnings of an actionable transition plan that will be flexible and move with you through life. But even more important than that, you're going to learn how to go through this process over and over again for yourself without needing to come to me. Look, it's not like I want to put myself out of business or anything, but I truly wish there was an easier way. Not everybody needs a lawyer. Not everybody can afford a lawyer. Not everybody feels comfortable coming to a lawyer. And, you know, this is just accessible 24/7. So this is going to fit any family nationwide because it is a comprehensive process as opposed to individual information about what the law is in your state. But it is going to get you started on the right path. And frankly, the most exciting piece that I've added to this is the group coaching with real-time support. I always wanted this cohort of peers, whether it was parents or other family members or professionals, and just this combination. Remember, I've been trying to bring together an entire group of people in the disability community to support and advocate for one another. And you can do that with the group coaching sessions. It will help you gain this support network that you need in a small group setting, where you have the freedom to ask the questions that are keeping you up at night. And it will help you, you know, continue on your transition journey with this group of cohorts, with your peers, so that you can continue using your workbook as a resource and discuss the questions that you have both in the group and then after the group is over. No one person has all the pieces of information that you need. But now you have a choice. You can jump on board and do this now. And if you do still have questions about whether these programs are right for you, we welcome you to use the scheduling link and spend a few minutes with Ivy Lee Martinez, who is my angel at all of the things that we do. I'm so grateful that you are here. I'm so glad that you're taking these first steps. I'm so excited to work with you. I would love to have you all sign up and be part of our, you know, our flagship Pushing Off from the Pier course and coaching program. please let me know if you have any feedback. I am so open to it. If you find that there are other things that you need that I haven't mentioned, or if the program doesn't meet your needs, thank you so much, everybody, for being here. I am so excited. So let's go forward. Let's create an army of advocates, okay? Yay. Thank you, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I just wanted to take a second to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to listen to these podcasts. I'm having a blast doing them, and I hope that you're finding the content to be what you were really hoping. If you are, please take a second to leave a rating and a review. It's so helpful in getting this content out to people who really need to hear it. Thank you so much.